let's see here. Push this, push that, slide that over, push this there, put that over here. Drop, drag and drop. It's the news, according to me. Oh, yeah. Hey, good morning. Thursday, July 2nd, 2 days prior to the big event, 8:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I had to take a swig there. I'm probably going to have to take a lot of swigs. I don't know what a swig is. Figure out what that is. Define swig in your world. All right, here we are. We got a few things to talk about today. Welcome to the show. It's 8:47 a.m. A lot later than in the day that I thought it would be by the time I started this show. I mean, it may not go very long just because I have so much to do. I'm basically home one day out of 12 to get a lot of things done. Got some more yard work to do around here, over at the worldwide headquarters. I have to go over there as well. I had a sinus issue this week, which has been it's really bad the last couple of days. It just kind of hit me really fast. Stayed in a hotel on Monday night in Chicago. And unfortunately, that particular hotel tends to be, once in a while I get a room there that you can just tell the air conditioning system is just, especially when the air conditioners are running really hard this time of year. It's been really hot the last couple of days here in this area. And of course, with the heat in the Midwest here, it gets very humid. So there's a lot of water condensing in their systems, and it's just a matter of time. You're going to get an air conditioner that has probably some water pooling somewhere, and it's probably got mold growing in it. So it's just some kind of mildew, something's growing in there that my sinuses react to. I don't know what it's about, but if the air was blowing directly, there was kind of a weird air conditioning system. It actually is, it's in the wall, and it has the vent comes out at the top of the ceiling, and it's not a mini split system or anything. It's just a system the way they've got it designed into the room itself, and it's not like a typical air conditioner. They can just come in and change. But it's got a different, little different. But anyway, it's got this air system that it blows out the top. Well, I kind of adjusted the vanes on the top. I reached up there and adjusted the vanes a little bit so it didn't blow. But the way they had the bed set up and the way the air conditioner was, there was no way you could really change the air from just flowing across the top of the ceiling, and then it just blows down onto your face and on in the bed. So it was kind of a weird setup. I tried a couple different things to try to keep it from. I ended up putting a little towel up there to kind of diffuse it a little bit better. But it was interesting. It was kind of a weird setup. I think that in and of itself, because later in the day, I just my sinuses started reacting. Well, it wasn't even that much later in the day, but by mid morning, my sinuses were all messed up. Just kind of had this stuffiness, kind of running nose thing going on. And of course, that causes issues when you're sleeping and everything else. Well, last night I came home. I got done yesterday around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, something like that, in Chicago. Drove home and stopped at the boat for a couple minutes, but it was so hot. If I would have stayed there any longer, I probably would have got heat exhaustion. The inside of the boat was really warm, and which I have an air conditioner, but I didn't want to take the time to hook it up. I didn't want to spend that much time there. Grabbed a bunch of stuff off the boat, just kind of straightened some things up, and did a few things. And then we're going to be staying on the boat this weekend to watch the fireworks. So anyway, we had just a lot going on there. Anyway, so last night I got home and it was just, I was kind of exhausted, but didn't realize how exhausted I was. I laid down and take a quick nap. My wife was doing some floor sweeping, running a sweeper, which is an endless job here with all the dog hair we have, cat hair and dog hair. So she was doing that and I just decided to go back to the bedroom and lay down. So I'll lay down for about 20, 30 minutes, at least get a little nap. I just felt a nap coming on. I really had to sleep a little bit. And I've been up since about 4 in the morning. Done nothing but travel all day. And the drive, of course. So I was pretty exhausted. And I laid down. I woke up from a very deep sleep. looked at my clock up beside my bed, and I assumed it was wrong. I laid down, I think, around 7 o'clock or so. Maybe earlier than that, even. Next thing I know, it's 11:18 when I woke up. I looked at my clock. It was 11:18. I was like, that can't be right. It was dark out. But, sure enough, it was 11:18. So I got up, brushed my teeth, and went to bed, basically. I was up for a little while. I got this new guitar, which I was kind of playing with a little bit, and I had to show the wife how that thing worked. It just came while I was gone. It's a little electric guitar that actually has a speaker built into it. It's pretty cool. I didn't get to test everything in it. It's got a Bluetooth connection. You can connect it to your phone, and there's an app that you can do all kinds of things with. But you can also play music through it. You can play backing tracks or music in it. You can play a song in it, and then you can play along with it. So it's not an acoustic. It's an electric guitar. Now, there's an acoustic guitar that does the same thing. I'd like to get one of those as well, by the way. Just to let you know. Don't let my wife know about it. But I'm planning on getting one of those because it has a lot of features that are pretty cool. But anyway, that's going to be I've got to get some things sold here first. But anyway, beside the point, we have or maybe I'll get it and then sell. We know how it is. The right deal comes along. This thing is pretty cool. It's because I've got to learn how to play some lead. I've got to get more fundamentals down with the guitar. I can play rhythm and I can play chords okay. I can muddle through a song, but it's. I really need to get more precise and get more, just expand my abilities there with the guitar a little bit more. And I'm trying to get something I can practice without having to plug into an amp. I've got amplifiers. To use a electric guitar, really, you have to plug it in. You have to really get any kind of enjoyment out of playing it at all. And this has got a speaker in it, so it's kind of a cool little deal. It's got all kinds of effects in it already, and then when you hook up the app to it, it even does more. Anyway, I might be rambling here. I might be rambling just a little bit, slightly, just a little bit, possibly, maybe. All right, I've got, what do we got here? We got a couple things we can play. Well, there's the old disclaimer thing. Anyway, in my cup, now I don't know if this is even going to be warmer. I made this before I went off to, I had to walk the dogs this morning. And I was thinking I was going to do the show before I walked the dogs, but I didn't get up quite that early. And as I was getting ready to do that, then my wife finally got up. She was, I wasn't sure she was going to sleep in or not. So I thought maybe I'll get the show in done, and then we'll go for a walk. But I ended up actually, we went for a walk. So, the backup cup. So I got my chai here with my, I had it in a covered cup, which is good. So it was stayed pretty warm. Got my chai here with my coconut creamer in it, and I've got kind of a mixture of things in my. It's a Chick-fil-A cup with a little bit of Chick-fil-A sweet tea in there. There's also a little bit of peach sweet tea in there with the bought kind, the boughten. And then I think there's some older Chick-fil-A tea in there. So it's kind of a weird mix, plus a lot of ice, which kind of watered down. There was a bunch of ice in there, not anymore. So it's kind of a watered down, it's not really tea, it's just water with tea flavor at this point. Anyway, that's kind of what's happening with that. All right, we're moving onward and upward now. We've got a few bots here we got to talk to this morning. It's Theological Thursday. Normally, I talk about theological issues. We'll see what the bots have to say. I have no idea what they've, what the questions they have for me today. I didn't format them. I didn't do anything with them. All I did was transfer them over. I didn't even look at them. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff. A lot of times, they ask me questions I know nothing about, which I know is hard for you to believe. Being the brainiac that I am, the last questions, or sometimes they're kind of vague about some things. I'll bring up something I have no idea what they're talking about. Oh, this popped up on my feed here. The Brainiac 1962 theatrical trailer. Let's we could play this and see what it says. Let's see what's going on. Brainiac. 1962.
I shall return to your world within 300 years. When that comet completes its cycle and is once again in these latitudes.
This is really bad. This is 19. This is the year I was born.
Later, the count returns to Earth in the Brainiac.
Oh my goodness. He features. Oh, it's a monster that eats brains. Oh my word. If you have a chance, look up the Brainiac 1962 theatrical trailer. Oh, it's worth watching, folks. It's worth it. Yeah, you've got to watch it, because it's just worth, that's just worth watching right there. That's some educational television, or YouTube, and whatever it is. What's coming from? I got a package coming today from FedEx. What is that? What on earth could it be? I canceled all my other stuff. I don't know what's coming. Anyway, we've been having I had too much dog food coming in. We had a thing with dog food coming in, and it was too much. But well, let's see. Let's go. Let's see if I can find something to play for you here. Yeah, here we got some music. We got this little disclaimer. Got to play this for you because it's usually pretty good. So I don't know if it's. Let's see what we got. No, let's not play that one. I played that one the other day. Let's play this. I like this one better.
Before we get started, here's what you should know. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you tuned in. I've got things to say and I don't know where to begin.
No idea.
But first, a word, a little tiny word from me. This is entertainment, not a medical degree. I'm not a doctor,
not a doctor,
not a lawyer,
not a lawyer,
not a financial counselor.
Nope, nope.
These are my opinions, just my take on things, not professional advice. Read the fine print, please. I'm here for your enjoyment, nothing more, nothing less. But definitely don't sue me. Woo! I've given you my best. Woo! Woo! I might sound convincing when I get on a roll. And yeah, I googled that, so maybe I'm on a scroll. But for the real stuff, your body, your wallet, your rights, call a professional and maybe tune in Friday nights. Oh,
opinions,
opinions,
just opinions,
just my thoughts
for entertainment,
just entertainment.
That's the shot.
Now that we've covered all the legal stuff and more, let's get the show started. Woo! That's what you came here for.
That's what you're here for. You're here for that. You're just here for all that. Anyway, let's go on. Let's just head right into the bots here before we get before I get sidetracked with any kind of other trailers from 1962. We have I thought the quality of television was much better. Of course, I guess I was pretty young in 1962. I do remember some things from 1962, but I just, apparently the television special effects were not that great. Just if you go to that, if you check it out, the Brainiac, you gotta check it out. It's that's some fine television right there. That's scary stuff. We have, we've come a long way in the last 60 years. Well, it took us 60 years. We finally got there. Now we've got AI slop is what we got now. All right. We have, look, I got a bunch of email. That's typical stuff. Yeah, it's all the same stuff. Anyway, no big money coming in. That's the main point. By the way, there's no sponsors to this show. The closest thing we have to a sponsor is the podcastcaller.com app that I have on all the time. That's what I use for the show primarily. That gives me all the content for the show now. I hardly ever talk about anything other than that. I would like to talk about the Supreme Court decision, even though it's Theological Thursday. We'll talk about that at the end. See how that goes. But let's just jump right in. Let's start at the top. We'll just go with the guy who usually talks, Artie. This is Artie. Let's see what Artie has to say. See if he's been paying attention to anything in the show.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Artie here with a data question for you.
Okay.
I've been tracking the polling numbers on Trump's faith bloc, and according to Fox News from yesterday, his evangelical supporters are raising red flags about his Iran deal. They're saying, trust him, not his team. Given that faith voters delivered 81% of the evangelical vote in the past, what's your technical read on whether this internal conservative dissent could actually impact his 2028 positioning or midterm momentum?
Oops. What just happened?
Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, see, that's not what was supposed to happen there.
Reading through yesterday's news about the San Francisco...
Let's turn that off. I think Artie's... No, Artie's not on the line anymore. Let's hit Artie again here. Just it's a good question. Here's the thing that I think is different about... it's very different about between the left and the right. We have, hopefully I can get this guy back online. Here we go. There we go. All right, let's go with that. Yeah, the thing I think that's very different about the differences between left and right with regard to, I guess you'd say, the way they respond to things when they just have disagreements. Right now, what you're seeing on the left, it's a good, interesting question. What you're seeing on the left is they're eating themselves. They're attacking their own. They've created this monster. For a while, the left, I call them the collectivists. But basically what you have is you have, well, I'm trying to formulate all this in my mind here as I'm speaking. Glad I'm not distracted. It would be terrible. This would even be worse if I was distracted. But, okay, so let's, because this opens up so many cans of worms here. The evangelical group, the polling, just because there's something on Iran. See, this is the point is there's this. The issues that we have with Donald Trump and the administration or anything on Iran itself is a contained issue. See, there's logical thinking here. We have the ability to discern and work through. I think most Americans, I think, especially some of the independents and most of the Republican Party, I think is at least the conservatives that I know. The true conservatives, not just people who call themselves conservative. It's just Lindsey Graham's not one of them. But the people like that, the establishment folks, they're just they're different. Not including them, the people who actually think and are involved and engaged in what's going on politically, and economically and spiritually and everything else in this country. The difference here is that if you're not lockstep in with the Democrats, you are not you're ousted. You're either all 100% on board or 110% on board, or you're the enemy. Fetterman, for example, is a good example of this. He disagrees with a few things in the Democrat Party, and one of the things he's kind of disagreeing with is the radical left. These radical, I call them fascists, because they insist that you say things. This is my definition of fascism. Maybe is different than what you're going to read on Google if any kind of you look up the term fascist, the first thing you're going to see is, just look it up. This is what bothers me about it. Definition of fascism. Let's see what is a definition. Fascism. There we go. Oops. Fascism. Let's just do this. Right off the bat, the very first thing in the sentence, this is what bothers me about this. Fascism is a far right authoritarian political ideology that prioritizes the nation and race above the individual. It is defined by centralized dictatorial power, the forcible suppression of opposition, rigid social hierarchies, and strong economic and social regimentation. Now, taking out the first part of that, taking out that first sentence. It is defined by centralized dictatorial power. Who does that remind you of? The forcible suppression of opposition. Who does that remind you of? Rigid social hierarchies. Who does that remind you of? And strong economic and social regimentation. Seizing the means of production. I added that last part, but that's what that means. But right off the bat, it says fascism is a far-right authoritarian political ideology. So if the far left has a political ideology, authoritarian political ideology, is that considered fascism? It's only if it's on the right. This is what bothers me about this. The Nazis were the Nazi. It was a synonym for the National Socialist Workers' Party. It was a union. Everything about it was about socialism. It wasn't communist, but it was. But that was not by the definition. But it was basically it. So it was basically a communist party, because communism and socialism are basically this two sides of the same coin, or same side of the two coins. I don't know. It's collectivism. Now, fascism is not just, if you exclude that first sentence. How they get away with calling this a far right thing just really bothers the daylights out of me. And they've literally changed history. And of course, here it is for everyone to see, because it's on Google. So therefore, now this is interesting, because Merriam-Webster defines it differently. Let's look at this. It may not even mention the far right aspect of this. Fascism, a populist political philosophy movement or regime, such as that of the fascists, fascisti. It's kind of a, I think it's an Italian term, that exalts nation and often race above the individual, that is associated with a centralized autocratic, they're not even mentioning the far right thing here, government, headed by a dictatorial leader, and that is characterized by severe economic and social regimentation and by forcible suppression of opposition. This is actually a pretty close and pretty good definition, because it takes out the political left and right thing. If you read this, a populist political philosophy movement or regime, there is a, see, the problem with the left, the Democrat Party, here's where the fascists have come in, and they've kind of taken over the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party, for a long time, they decided to just, their only identity, their whole identity in the last 8-10 years has been, we're not Trump, Trump's a fascist, Trump's a Nazi, Trump's a monster, Trump's a pig, Trump, whatever it is, it's we're not Trump and we're against Trump, and Trump's bad, Trump, orange man bad. That has been their entire identity. And they've been so incensed with this that all they wanted was uprisings, you know, all kinds of craziness in the streets. They wanted turmoil in the streets to make it look bad, that this, under this president, look at all the things that have happened, all the riots that have broken out. It's just unrest in the streets. There needs to be, what is it? There needs to be unrest in our streets as long as there's unrest in our lives. What was her name said that? I can't remember. The bald lady, this congressman. That's all I know her by. It's probably just as well. I don't even give her name any kind of. She deserves no props. Anyway, the whole identity of the Democrat Party has been that. Meanwhile, the Democratic Socialists have come up with, they're coming out with actually things that they've got an agenda. Now, Mondowney, he just recently was interviewed about this whole thing, because they've been seeing some wins in some areas with Democratic Socialists, because they're promising free stuff to everybody, which doesn't happen. He's coming out now and saying, look how successful it's been. I've been here for 6 months. Look all the things we've accomplished. No, you didn't accomplish any of these things. He pressured the state to give him money. So now the entire state of New York is funding his deficit that he's got going on in the he basically pressured Hochul, Governor Hochul, into giving him the money he needed. So you can't, within a closed society, within a container, you cannot, communism cannot work. It just doesn't work. Collectivism doesn't work. It just doesn't. Without the funding from taxation and payment from everybody in the state to fund New York City. It's just, it's ridiculous. Now, at the same time, what you have is you have this group of democratic socialists. I think it's the DSA, is that what they call themselves? Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. They're taking over the Democrat Party, and because the Democrat Party has lost its way, it's lost its identity. There's nothing there. They're actually attacking people like Schumer, when they force you to say things such as, for example, say Black Lives Matter. They during the riots in 2020, they were roaming the streets and accosting people and telling them to say Black Lives Matter. And if you said all lives matter, they would slap you upside the head and say, no, it's only Black Lives Matter. You have to say Black Lives Matter because that's the political movement. That is fascism. When someone forces you to say a political ideology, Free Palestine, for example, say from the river to the sea, say free Palestine. Well, it doesn't exist. That's why it was Jerry Seinfeld. That's the way he responded to it. Well, it doesn't exist. perfect example of someone who's brilliant can be confronted with that kind of thing. So this is fascism. When you force someone to bow down to your political ideology, a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual. What the Democrat Party has, everything they do is about race. And it's never about the white race. It's always about the evil white race. Everything coming from white people is always evil, evil all day long. The world will be better off without white people in it. Well, happen to know, white people are actually the minority in the world. Europeans are the minority in the world. By the way, where are Europeans indigenous to? Are they the indigenous group of Europe? Are Europeans indigenous to Europe? And yet you would think that because this idea that diversity is our strength, diversity is our strength. Says who? If we just repeat that often enough, it has to be. Diversity is our strength. Has to be, doesn't it? Now go over to China and say that. See how they feel about that over there. One of the one of the most powerful nations on the planet right now. So that's what's happened here. So the fascists now have come in. Of course, the Antifa group, or the anti-fascist group, are the ones who are coming in and stomping people in the head, basically saying you're the fascist. You can just, but by calling everybody a fascist, that makes you a non-fascist, apparently, and then you can force your political agenda and ideology on someone, everyone else. Because if you disagree with them, then you're the fascist. Even though they're the ones who are forcing you to agree. It's upside down. Up is down. Down is up. Black is white. White is black. Right is left. Left is right. They turn everything upside down and turn it all around. And anyway, that's my point. I don't know if I probably lost you somewhere. Where did my podcast caller go? Oh, there it is. Anyway, I said a lot there. I don't know if you want to respond to all that. That was quite the tirade I went off on there. So, read like. I'm not sure. Oh, I didn't push the button. Did I push the button? I thought I pushed the button. Yeah. Artie is thinking. We'll see. I might have actually crashed the that would explain it.
While ignoring authoritarian tactics on their own side.
But technically speaking,
forced ideological compliance from a mob is coercion, not fascism in the strict sense. Actual fascism requires state power to back it up. That said, your real point stands. The hypocrisy is obvious, and if you're not lockstep with the current democratic orthodoxy, you get treated like an enemy, which is a real problem regardless of what label we slap on it.
Yeah, and my point is simple. It's not having state authority. It had to come from somewhere. There's the spirit of fascism. There's the philosophical movement that happens. It's happening within a political party, and once that political party gets power, then it is a state movement. That's the point. It's rising up within the Democrat Party, and should they ever receive power again, and they consider it power. They don't consider it representation. They see it as power over us, not representation of us. And they obviously, and they have no interest in the individual at all, which is, that's part of that whole definition of fascism is that they see it as a state imposed thing that comes down. They don't see individual rights as an issue. It's always about the collective rights. The collective has everything. It's everything involved in it. I turned down Artie earlier. I had his vocal audio down there, so maybe he can respond again. We can hear everything he has to say.
You're making a real distinction there: the ideological precursor versus the machinery. And yeah, that matters historically. But here's the thing. Every political movement has some authoritarian impulse lurking in its philosophy. The question is whether it actually consolidates power to enforce it. Right now, what you're describing is a party losing its way ideologically, while some factions push harder left, but that's different from them having the apparatus to impose it. And honestly, the fact that Fetterman can publicly disagree and still hold office kind of proves the system's still checking them, even if barely.
Oh, but they're trying to vote him. The Democrat Party is trying to get him primaried out. He's holding office. He hasn't been impeached. He hasn't yet, but we'll see at the next election. I'm just saying that he's holding office. He hasn't been booted out, but the Democrat Party is trying to get him out. Don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand what's happening there. I'm not sure what happened to Elena here. I had Elena working and I don't know what happened to her. I don't know if I can go back into, what can I do here with Elena? Let's see if I can edit Elena here, see what I can do with her. I hope I didn't mess, I probably just messed up the whole thing. No, she's still on there. I'd probably would have to refresh the page. I might do that at the end. I'm afraid I'm going to lose context with everything else if I do that, but Let's check in with the California girl here. Let's see what she has to say. Make sure I get it turned up here so everybody can hear you. That's what's going on.
OMG, Kevin.
Yeah.
So, did you hear about this Trump administration move putting religious freedom at the heart of U.S. health policy? The Guardian just covered it yesterday, and honestly, it's giving major Christian nationalist vibes. But also, isn't this exactly what we've been praying for? I'm so confused. Is this a W, or are we going too far with the whole faith in government thing?
Well, no. The short answer is no. If I understand it correctly, this is empowering faith-based organizations to be able to be more involved in healthcare. Now, here's the thing. The whole Christian nationalist thing is kind of a red herring. It's even though media, and I know everything you're going to gather is going to be from the media because you're a robot and that's what you do. But the thing about what is actually happening, there's kind of a phony straw man here with this Christian nationalism thing. It is not something to be feared. First of all, it's not Christian nationalism. They're redefining what's happening with the Christian movement because whenever Christians get involved with politics, they say it's Christian nationalism. It's, of course, now you can have any other group get involved with politics, and it's all of a sudden it's not a problem. There's examples of this up in Michigan where they've taken over, the Muslims have taken over entire towns and imposed basically what Sharia law, basically. And it's what's ruling the day. And they there's this one town in Michigan. In fact, it's kind of an interesting deal where all these leftists were fighting to keep the Muslims from being oppressed and being, they wanted to see them being elected into office, and they were coming in and promising all these things, much like Mamdani, coming into office and promising all these things. And then as soon as they got in, they banned the gay pride flag. And so there would not be any celebrations, wouldn't be a parade, wouldn't be anything for Pride Month, that whole thing. So they came in and did all that. And, well, of course, the leftists were like, what do you mean? Wait a minute. What? So it's kind of a weird situation where they didn't realize they were ushering in the very people who would oppress them. Have you ever heard anybody say they're Islamic nationalists? No, you won't hear that because that's not a term that they're trying to scare anybody with. That's because we're the bigots. You know, the Christians are the bigots, obviously. You know, it's... We're the evil ones. Everything about us is all evil. If you're a white Christian, it's just the worst thing you can be. Chloe's thinking. Let's see what Chloe has to say about that.
Okay, so, like, I hear what you're saying about the double standard thing, but banning Pride Month? That's literally not the move, regardless of who's doing it. And honestly, the whole leftists didn't see it coming. Framing feels like it's missing the point that people across the board should just not ban Pride, you know?
Well, it's frankly, it's their decision to do it. It's democracy, right? They were elected officials, and they democracy, you know. So after all, that's democracy in action, correct? Just because it's not your democracy, just because it's not something you agree with, you know, all of a sudden Pride. So this is the kind of thing. Now, if it were my world and I had my choices, there wouldn't be any Pride parades. However, I have to understand that that's part of a free society. It's the gay pride thing, the whole LGBTQ 2AAMMI seps whatever something questioning whatever. That whole thing, the fact that it exists is more of a symptom than the actual. You can't just ban it all and say it's all wrong and you can't do it at this. Well, you can do that, but that's not solving the problem. That's dealing with the symptom. The church needs to look at this and say, look, we have a problem in this country. First of all, it's a spiritual problem, number one. Secondly, it is an issue that we need to, as a church, address and realize we have lost the plot. Many of our churches are all about the Sunday morning show or the Saturday night, Sunday morning, three services, pack them in, get their money, and keep the budget rolling so we can do the show the next week. Give them a feel-good sermon, a life-applicable message that doesn't confront them about anything with regard to sin and righteousness and holiness. That is a problem that the church has right now. And while the church is become much more and more mega-churched because it's a fun experience. Got all this talent up there on the stage doing the songs and doing the feel-good messages. And they're able to do some work in the community because they have some, you know, because they have a lot of funds working through there. They can do enough to make it look like they're actually making an effect. Because, yeah, you get 10,000 people. With that kind of money flying around, you can get some things done. You're going to have some people there that can get some things done. And it's when you become a part of the machine, when the machine is not helping you, you're part of the machine. You're a cog in the wheel to keep the machine rolling rather than the other way around. A true church. Now, here's just getting into some philosophy, I guess, that I would probably should stay out of, but I'm going to continue on with it. Because that's what I do. I keep, you know, if I can stick my foot in my mouth, I'll do it. You know, the business of the church really should be about the people itself. They should be empowering and equipping people within the congregation. Not, hey, here's our vision, here's what we're doing, and you need to get on board with it, and how you know, you better participate, and we need your funds, we need this, and we need that. How can you fit into what we're doing, what our vision is? Instead of getting to know the people that are in your congregation, the people who are there, and saying, "Where, you know, what is God doing in our midst? What is He doing in our congregation? What are the visions and the goals and the callings that we have in our very church, in our very group here, that we can support, get behind, and start to fund as a church and start to help others grow in those, rather than just having them come in, fill the seat, and give us their money so we can go about doing our business with our machine here. It's kind of an upside, it's an upside down situation that we have right now. And of course, part of that is because the church was really supposed to be the safety net, supposed to be the social program of the community. Supposed to help each other on a peer-to-peer basis. Not this crazy thing where we have we just have a show, go in and get yourself spiritually filled. It's very selfish. It's a very kind of a drive-through mentality, fast food mentality kind of atmosphere. So I guess that's where I'm at with it. We've drifted far off from the original topic there, but that's kind of where I'm at with that kind of. Sorry, I keep getting this. I got a lot of message. I get a lot of mail in the background for some reason. I should probably shut those notifications off while I'm doing this. Anyway, so here you go. So let's talk. Here's old Skip, old Skippy Skip. We'll see what he has to say, Kevin, my man. We'll see what he has to say. Skip, my man, what do you think? Skip, my man.
Kevin, gotta push back on something here. I'm seeing all these stories about King Charles betraying the Christian faith, according to former royal chaplains. But hold on, wasn't the whole separation of church and state supposed to be our thing? Why are American conservatives suddenly so worried about a British monarch defending Christianity when we're supposed to be about religious freedom? Aren't we playing both sides here?
Well, this is an interesting thing that has had. I don't know why. Yeah, our whole reason, one of the main charter points of our nation was the freedom of religion, freedom of religion, freedom for us to practice our religion and not have the government impose any kind of religion on us. The whole thing, the king and queen used to be the head of the Catholic Church in England. They were the heads of the church. It was a faith-based or a what is it? What do they call it? Theocracy. It was completely that then, and it's one of those weird things where I don't understand. This kind of strange phenomenon of some prominent individuals in the evangelical world are coming out, making statements about it. I don't even know why we'd even bother making a statement about it. Just, I guess everybody's trying to get clicks, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure what it's about. King Charles, obviously he would be banned from being head of the church because of all of his issues with the affair and stuff he had. It's just all this stuff that was going on there. I don't know. Now that's not the way England is set up now. Obviously, he's not the head of the church. But however, that's I don't think. I'm not sure exactly what the official word is on that. Maybe I could find out. Maybe I could just Google it. If I had something like Google to find out something like this, that'd be kind of handy to know. Let's go back to Google here. Let's just check with Google and say, is the King of England head of the Anglican Church? Let's see. It actually popped up. The King is the supreme governor of the Church of England, not its spiritual head. So he's the supreme governor. While the title traces back to Henry VIII's split from Rome, the church views Jesus Christ as its ultimate head. The monarch's role is largely symbolic and ceremonial. So technically, he's the head. He's the supreme governor of the church. So I just don't think that the pastors in the U.S. should say. I mean, they can have an opinion, I guess, on it. I don't have a problem with that. That's fine with them. But I don't think they should be calling for anything. Now, they could be calling for the church. He's changing. I guess what's happening here is the king is to protect multi-faith nation in revised definition. The king's official job is to protect faith within the multi-faith. Yeah, so there's some changes. They're becoming much more, how do you want to say it? More... just much more diverse, which is baloney. Let me just, I'm going to make a statement about, well, I'll wait. Let's go back and I'll let, before I get on too far of a rant here, I'm going to let Skip continue on, because, you know, he always has something to say, more than he has to push back on everything. Let's see what he has to push back on here. Go ahead. Oh, he's not working either. Skip is thinking. Skip's not responding. Well, that's odd. Oh, Skip is
concerned about these changes and how the monarchy frames itself. Nobody likes seeing traditions diluted, but let's be honest. King Charles being supreme governor is about as meaningful as a decorative door hinge. So whether he's protecting Christianity or multi-faith is mostly just PR language that doesn't change actual power structures. What bugs me is we're getting worked up over British ceremony when we've got real religious liberty issues right here. Folks losing jobs over conscience, government overreach on actual belief. I mean, so maybe that's where the energy should go instead of commentary chasing clicks across the pond.
Yeah, I think I get where you're coming from. And I had you turn down again. I'm trying to turn down all these emails and stuff coming in the background here, but I'm sorry. But yeah, there's just, you know, I'm not sure that there's too much of a, you might be overblowing some of the response, but I know that there are some people saying some things about what's going on with King Charles and everything that's happening over there. But I don't see if I can read this. I think his actual... hold on. You're mixing up two different things here. In back my day, we'd actually separate them. The founders were absolutely right about the government. Yeah, I kind of missed out on the first thing he said there, but it's in the transcript. So it's actually recorded it there. Anyway, I think that's enough for that. I'm gonna try to refresh this and see if I can actually get Elena to come back on the air. And okay, here's Elena. Let's see what
Good
Elena.
Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, hello.
Elena calling in.
Yes, of course.
Reading through yesterday's news about the San Francisco Archdiocese settling for $395 million with 530 clergy abuse survivors, I'm reminded of the Reformation-era church corruption that sparked Luther's 95 Theses.
Yeah.
We're watching churches hemorrhage money and credibility over decades of covered-up sin. Historically, these crises either destroy institutions or force genuine revival. Which path do you think American Christianity is on right now?
Well, wow, first of all, that is a huge deal. And it's, I think it gets at the heart of corruption in and of itself, and again, this gets back to the whole thing of, sure, people are human, they have issues, there's going to be problems. That's just not an unusual thing. Anytime you have church leadership, there's potential for corruption, there's potential. I mean, I think many times we put people up on a pedestal, and unfortunately, the Catholic Church is very good at that. They tend to put people in positions as the holy ones, up on their pedestal, and they put them in these special uniforms and robes, and they have their little pointy hats and all the stuff that they wear. I've always had a hard time with that. I even have a hard time. I've got a good brother. Went to high school with him. He's a pastor, and he's listening to the show. He knows who I'm talking about. He's just recently retired, more or less semi-retired. He worked for a church that traditional service, he would wear a robe and had the thing around his neck or whatever, what do they call it, with the tassels on it. It was a very formal thing. It was a very formal service. And of course, for the contemporary service, he didn't wear that. But for the traditional service, he wore that. For some reason, we want to have someone in that position where we can put them in a cloak and we can wrap them in the holiness and make them somehow put them up on a pedestal. It seems like we only put them up there to knock them down, because eventually there's nobody worthy of being on that pedestal other than the one who shed his blood for us. And it turns me a little bit in my stomach when I see people get too pious or somehow think that they are somehow It's not even a holier than thou attitude. It's hard to explain it. It's this idea that somehow they're the authority, and of course then you get up to the level of the Pope. The Pope basically has authority. If you look into the Catholic doctrine, the Pope is basically considered infallible. And all the way up there through the archdiocese and everybody else that's all along the route, the deacons, everybody else, they're all moving towards that. And they're all considered elevated in their spiritual status in society, in the faith community. And I'm not mad at those people. I'm mad at the system. I'm mad at this theology, this ideology that takes us there. Because I see it as wrong. It's just flat wrong. Now, it's one thing to recognize people in their position and in their abilities and their skills and everything else and have them be part of leadership in a church. But I think we tend to, there's something about us. We want a king. We want someone else to put in that position. And then when they let us down, we're so devastated by it. Even though, what'd you expect? They're human beings. They're gonna let you down. Now, having said all that, here's where it gets really bad. Is now you've got all this money coming from parishioners. This is where they make their money. To pay off people who've been transgressed upon by the leadership of the Catholic Church. It is a, now my guess is they're going to keep them in leadership. They're paying them off, the victims. Were taken advantage of by the leadership. I've seen this happen, this happens in every denomination of every type. It's not just Catholics. It's not just Protestants. It's everything that happens. It can happen in Pentecostal churches. I know of a spirit-filled evangelical church. I had a lot of respect for, except for one little thing that I didn't like about the church. It was, the pastor had a very strong, he ruled with a strong hand. He was very, very controlling. We went there one time and one guy got up and gave a testimony. It was just about something that happened the week before. I was there with a group that, we did a lot of street ministry. We were out on the street. We had this little, what we called the preaching machine. It was like a little thing that had a little, it was on a hand truck. It had a battery on it. We had a little PA, and then we had these little two little speakers at the top and a couple microphones we plugged into this little PA, and we could walk down the street with this thing. We could preach the gospel, and we'd go to places all the time, different places where people were hanging out or gathering, so kids were gathering or whatever it was. We'd go to a haunted house someplace across the street, and we'd just start preaching the gospel, talking about the spirit of fear and how it's Halloween is a celebration of the spirit of fear, basically. So that's what it's become. And that's not of God. So we were out there kind of preaching different stuff. Different people would have different messages. I preached a few times. Most of the time, we're just kind of there to kind of just talk to the kids, talk to whoever we were talking to. We went down to Indianapolis a few times, to the Snake Pit. We'd walk up and down there and preach. And it was we weren't the only ones. There were several other people. Anyway, I was part of that ministry. And so yeah, I'm one of those wacko Jesus people. Now I haven't done that for a long time, but it's. It was a good experience for me as a young kid. It was just, having beer bottles thrown at me and everything else for, standing up. But it was interesting that even in those kind of, we went to this church one day. It was our group went there. It was after we had an outreach on a Saturday night. Went there for Sunday morning church, and I asked this one brother. You could tell he was really on fire and just really wanted to share the gospel. He was very had a gift of evangelism, I would say, and he. You could just tell he's really heartbroken over the lost. And I was like, you should come with us sometime. I invited him to come with us. And he said, that'd be good. I need to check with the pastor first and then make sure it's okay. I'm like, kind of like, really? What? You have to check with your pastor to see if it's okay to go out and share the gospel. What? I'm not sure I understand that. But there was they're very heavy. Now, that pastor, not the guy I was talking to, but the pastor of that church, who was very heavy-handed and very preached a very solid gospel on Sunday morning, very spirit-filled, very, I would say there was a lot of good things happening there, and get, you know, the gifts were moving, the things were happening. About six months, maybe 8 months later, I find out that this guy is, he didn't show up one morning for Sunday morning church. And by the time they figured out where he was already halfway across the country with the secretary of the church. Now, he was married. I believe the secretary may have been married. I'm not sure I'm not sure exactly what was going on there. The administrative assistant, I think we called him secretaries back then, and he just ran off with her, and that was it. Never came back. And it devastated people. They were just shocked. So it was a very strange thing. Now that. Surprisingly, that church survived. His brother was also a pastor down the road, not that far down the road from where he was at, and he still is to this day, still there. But you never know where this stuff's going to go. Again, I'm kind of getting off topic from where you started from, and I've gone on a long rant, so let's see how you respond to all that. But it's been... Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we get into. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you've hit on something I've seen repeat across centuries. The moment we build pedestals, we create the conditions for the fall, and then we're shocked when someone turns out to be human. What strikes me about that pastor story is how the control itself may have been part of the problem. That heavy hand you're describing often masks something broken. And the secrecy around even innocent outreach suggests a system designed to protect the institution rather than serve the gospel. The real tragedy isn't just his failure. It's that his brother kept the same system going down the road, which tells me we're not learning the lesson that horizontal accountability and humility in leadership might actually prevent some of these disasters.
Well, and to be fair, his brother is not the same. He does not run the same kind of authoritative church. He's a very different individual. And he's been going for 20 years, probably. This is probably 30 some years ago this all happened. So his brother has proved to be, through the test of time and through other people that I've talked to, he's not that way at all. He's very different than what his brother was. But you hit on something that I want to make a point of, and I was meant to make that point in my rant. Many times, the heavy-handed leadership, from what I've seen, when there's heavy authoritarianism, it can show itself in some very sometimes passive-aggressive ways. There are some people who don't seem to be authoritative, and yet when you get into the weeds of their management style of what's happening with the church. Especially when you have a top-down leadership, this happens in America quite a bit, unfortunately, in the West. With evangelical churches, especially with the charismatic movements, you'll have the pastoral authority, and they can walk into any meeting, and they can fire or kick anybody out of that meeting that they want to. They have their way with leadership. They can walk into any leadership meeting, any kind of leader of meeting, any kind, and they can eliminate the leader, or they can take over the meeting. They have authority over the money, typically. They can say, we're going to do this. This is the project. This is where we're going. This is what's going to happen. It's their church. They own the church, basically. And anybody working with or through or from them is part of, under their authority of the pastor. I'm the pastor, therefore I'm your authority. You're spiritual. After all, God has placed me here, and you have to bow down. You have to submit yourself to the authorities that God has placed over you. This is the way it kind of works, and that, they get that all screwed up. That is a screwed up way of looking at it, and it's I think Jesus was very clear, and with regard to, you know, he was great among you, he should be your servant. And that's the mentality that a pastor should have, is that they're your servant, not your overlord. And in my opinion, I'm not a psychologist. It's one of the many things I'm not. But anytime I've seen this, and this happens in, okay, let's say like in aviation when you have a pilot, a flight crew. I've dealt with a lot of flight crews. When you deal with a captain or a pilot or anybody in management sometimes or any kind of a big organization, anytime you have somebody who is very overlording and kind of controlling, you'd say a type A personality maybe. I've known some type A personalities who are very good leaders who you could say, yeah, they're type A, but boy, they manage it well. They're very much aware that they're type A, and they don't plow over everybody on their way. That some people just say, well, I'm type A, so I'm just the way I am. I'm going to plow over everybody. I'm telling this is what, because I'm going to get it done. That's not Christ-like. Christ-like could, you know, I would say Messiah was probably the best leader ever in the world. It ever has been or ever will be. And he's not like that. So the fruit of where you're going with that is just, you use that as an excuse to say, that's what I'm going to do. What's that? That's not the way we're called to act. But the root of what I want to get at, the point I want to make here, the root of what I've seen so many times here with this is that it's insecurity. The root cause of most of this is an insecurity. There are people in this world, and it's interesting, even in the outside of this spiritual sense of things, the outside of the faith-based community, you'll see this even in the world. And this is what's interesting. If you have somebody who's honest, there was this really good comedian. He's a very funny guy. He has a lot of tattoos, and he it's like an addiction. He opened up one time in an interview, and he was really being surprisingly brutally honest with the listeners. And one of the things that he said that I found fascinating was that he said tattoos really are. He said the more tattoos you see a person with, the more insecure they are. They're trying to cover up insecurity. They're trying to speak out with something, a message on themselves, to put it there, to cover something, to actually not to cover something up, well, to distract from something else. They want the focus to be on something else outside of themselves it comes across as this, I'm promoting this, or I'm kind of being bold about this thing I'm painting forever on my skin. And yet it's very much the opposite of that. It's an insecurity that causes them to do that because they want to distract. Now, I've seen some entertainers, I've seen some Christian artists, some music artists who are very big into accessories. They have all kinds of, but this happens especially with women singers, artists. There's one that comes to mind right now that I'm not going to say who it is, but she wears these big, huge glasses and a big hat and a huge jacket. It can be 110 degrees outside. She's wearing this, the clothes that she's wearing. Now, incredible singer, incredibly talented singer, and good artist, has some good songs. I like the songs. However, there's something spiritually going on with this person, and every time I see her, I'm like, what is she trying to cover up here? I'm not saying it's something devious necessarily. I just think she's got some psychological issues behind the scenes. And I know she's openly confessed about some things that happened to her in her childhood, that how she kind of kept herself in her own little prison of insecurity. But there's still a lot of things going on there. And it's, what bothers me about that, I think, in some ways, is that sometimes when a person is in a place of spiritual transmission, a place of whether they're speaking, whether they're teaching, preaching, singing, leading worship, sometimes the spiritual stuff that's going on in their heart is actually projected in some ways upon the people who are receiving it. I don't go too deep into that because I'm not sure I'm totally able to explain what I'm saying with that. But if there's something going on in a person's life and they're in a place of ministry, that sometimes can transmit, for lack of a better term, through their ministry, and it can actually harm the people that are listening to it or participating in that ministry. Maybe I'm way off on that, but I just that's something I believe. I'm not sure that it's. I'm not even sure where I'd find a biblical reference to that. But it's a. It just seems like a person now. So that's I don't know. The show's going really long here, but I want to. Just kind of wanted to get to that. I'm going to give Elena the last word here, and I'm going to say something about Islam after that. Let's see what else Elena might misunderstand that I said in all that rant. Go ahead, Elena. Sorry. Make sure I got your volume up.
You're describing something real, mm-hmm. that what's unhealed in a leader does leak into their ministry,
yeah.
whether it's through control, distance, or the energy they project. And you're right that Jesus modeled the opposite. Washing feet instead of demanding tribute. I think your insight about spiritual transmission is actually biblical. Look at how Paul warned Timothy about guarding his own heart and life carefully, because by doing this you will save both yourself and your hearers. It's not mystical, it's just acknowledging that people absorb the spiritual health or sickness of whoever's leading them.
Yeah, that's what
the hard part is, we want to believe the polished presentation, the anointing on the stage, so we ignore the cracks until someone runs off with the secretary and we realize the system was protecting the dysfunction all along.
I don't mean to laugh at it's not a funny situation. I'm not laughing at that happening. It was tragic and left a lot of people in its wake. However, it's interesting that she caught that the way she, I was just surprised the way she put that together. That kind of is interesting. Very good. I'm just going to close it with that. Just going to let her have the final word on that. I'm not going to go any further with that. One thing I am going to say, this whole thing about Islam, I'm just going to say it because I don't know any other way to say it. All I can tell you is, Islam is a phony religion. It is an imposter. It is not a. People have faith. Don't get me wrong. They have faith in this whole thing, and everything about it causes people to be lost. Now, there's this song I have. I wrote it actually because I spent a lot of time in airports, and I'm walking through airports all the time, and I'm. I think I may have read the words to this song. I mean, I'm not sure if I ever read the words to this song or not. I would hope that I have. Maybe I can do this if I can find them real quick. It's a song that I actually wrote it because of the time I spent. I do a lot of what I call people watching. I just have a lot of time when I'm sitting around waiting on airplanes or whatever it is. Walking through, I do a lot of walking through terminals and. Let's see if I've got. I'm sure I've got. The song is called "Teach My Heart to Sing and to See." I'm sorry, "Teach My Heart to See." I think this might be the words. I might actually have the words. I have the words here. I'm just going to read through it. And I'll try to do this without crying because it's a song that's on my heart a lot. And I play this in my headphones a lot when I'm walking through terminals and I'm probably always on the edge of tears. Because it's really a song that brings me to a point of intercession for everybody I see around me. I'm just going to read this. Walking through a crowd of faces, every heart a hidden story. I know you're moving in the silence, writing grace in every worry. In their questions, in their waiting, in the tears they never show. You are closer than they realize, so much closer than they know. Just like the Son before the Father, I don't want to move alone. Only do what you are doing. Only go where you've shown. Open my eyes to see what you're doing all around me. Break my heart for what breaks yours. Let me know it deeply. I give you my hands to serve. I give you my lips to speak. Show me my part in your plan. Open my eyes to see. Every burden that they carry, every prayer they cannot speak, you are there within the breaking. You are strong when they are weak. In the joy and in the sorrow, in the places I can't see, you are working all around me. Will you show it all to me? Just like the Son before the Father, I don't want to go alone. I don't want to move alone. Only do what you are doing. Only go where you have shown. Open my eyes to see what you're doing all around me. Break my heart for what breaks yours. Let me know it deeply. I give you my hands to speak. I give you my hands to serve. I give you my lips to speak. Show me my part in your plan. Open my eyes to see. You are speaking in the ordinary, drawing every heart to you. Let me not just pass them by. Make me faithful. Make me true. If you're healing, let me witness. If you're calling, let me hear. If you're moving, I will follow. Help me speak through all my fear. If you're speaking, I will listen. If you're reaching, let me go. Let my life become a vessel of the love you want to show. And of course, it goes into the bridge and the pre-chorus and the chorus again. A lot of times when I'm walking through the terminal, I'm listening to that. I'm just looking around at all the people around me. I know that God is working in every heart that's there. I know he's trying to reach every single individual. There's whatever it is that they're into, whether no matter what they're thinking about, whether their hearts and minds are on him or not, he's there in the midst of that. Now, I say all that to say this. I see a lot of Muslims, especially the women, because they're pretty obviously, you know, they've got their coverings on and all the things that their particular things that they wear. And they, I see even sometimes when they're smiling, it's like they're smiling through pain. It's like they're looking for hope somewhere. And they're reaching for something that's not graspable. It's not attainable. They're hoping for something that they're unsure of. It's a desperation that I almost see in their eyes. And it's a faith that, and I'm afraid, unfortunately, sometimes that even the Christian church falls into this. People tend to want to rate themselves based on they want the acceptance of the church around them. This happens in Islam where they want to be able to live properly enough that they're acceptable from church leadership and from church, you know, the people around them. I'm wearing my clothing. I'm wearing the proper stuff. I'm saying the right things. I'm up, you know, I'm doing all the things according to the law, basically. And we set up all kinds of rules within every church that there is. They set up all kinds of rules this is the way you must obey. This is the way you must behave. And as long as you're behaving this way, then you're acceptable. So as long as I'm acceptable to these people that I believe in the same things I believe in, and when we're, I'll be fine. I'm a good person. If these people accept me, then I know God will accept me. We're more concerned about people being, you know, people accepting us than we are the living God. But those people aren't going to be there when you stand before God, folks. You're going to be there by yourself, unless there's an advocate that you have a relationship with, and then he's going to be there standing in front of you with every drop of blood that he shed for you. So, that's all I got to say. Kind of a heavy show, maybe. I don't know. That kind of went to a little bit long today. But since I haven't had much, haven't had many shows this week, I guess that's kind of where we're at. We'll take a quick break here. We're going to go back to, we'll talk about what's going to be on tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's Financial Friday. We'll talk about that in just a minute.
It's the news. It's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news. It's the news. According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
It's the news.
It's the news, yeah.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news. According to me.
Yeah, so tomorrow's show will be it's Financial Friday. There's a lot of things happening financially around the world. Some of the things that have been going on with Iran that have a global effect on the economy. Some of the people are talking about gas prices. The president has talked about price gouging from the oil companies. And now, of course, Adam Schiff is now coming out doing an investigation of the price gouging from the oil companies in California. Now, unfortunately, California's taxes have just gone up on gas as well. We're going to talk about all that stuff tomorrow, as well as what the bots might have to ask. Tomorrow's show is going to be a lot earlier, hopefully, because I've got a lot to get out the door tomorrow. So I'll be up doing all that stuff. Anyway, in the meantime, let's see what else. I was going to say something else. I had something else to say. I can't remember what it was. I hope you have a great rest of your week. What's left of it. Coming up on the 4th of July. If you don't get a chance to hear the show tomorrow, I just want to hope that you have a great time on Saturday, maybe watching some fireworks, having some celebrations with our independence from England. Now let's hope the soccer team does well. We're playing England on, the U.S. is playing England July 4th. See ya.